Hi, everyone. We are gathering together here for our April group coaching call. Today, we're going to focus on show versus tell in scenes, and we're also going to look at Trent's pages. But first, we're going to start with our usual check-in. I'd love to know, metaphor check-in, how you're doing with your manuscript, your writing, your editing, your marketing. And a new thing today, just curious, I would love to talk about or hear from each of you, what is your favorite book that you're reading right now? So your favorite book that you're reading right now, if you could just mention that in your check-in, that'd be awesome. Or put it in the chat, that would be great. All right, who would like to go first? Since Ezra is busy, we'll have one of you to go first. Carol, Trent, Carol. All right, Carol, I'm gonna put you in the spotlight.
Hello.
I see you're talking, but I can't hear you yet.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you through Ezra's iPad, but not my, let's
see. Uh-oh.
No, there we go. There we can go.
Okay. There we go. It always helps to smack the table.
There we go. It all helps.
Always helps.
Yeah. So how you doing?
What's my check-in? I feel like an editing fool.
Is that like?
It is great. No, it is great because I've been editing from the front of Sunday Punch in the middle and at the end, and we're all going to meet. We're all going to be done.
Great.
So I'm getting great responses from my beta readers. We do one chapter at a time, so it's. But I'm doing in. So I get those all put in, and then I struggle with this other writer's group that I have, and they're only once a month, and sometimes he cancels, so they're not as quick about doing things, so it might just be this other group that I run through. So I feel like an editing juggernaut.
Okay. Good word. Excellent. And any book that you're reading that you're enjoying, favorite book?
I just finished BJ Daniels' book about what else? Montana and murder. And of course romance. And so I didn't really notice it before, but she really sticks to the formula. She's got a good formula. She sticks to it. You know, the guy doesn't want to meet the girl, but he has to protect her, and she doesn't want him protecting her, but she does anyway, and the bad guy's trying to kill them both, and then they end up killing the bad guy and saving the day. So she's got a formula that really works, and I had always thought that your books had to be way different with each one, and so I didn't know that you could just kind of change out the characters, different places, but the framework is pretty much all the same.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so that was kind of a revelation to me.
Oh, good. That's great. Right. Yeah. Yeah, you do something well, you love it, you stick to it. And if it's successful, all the best. All the best.
Yep.
Great. Well, thank you for that check-in. Super duper. All right. Who would like to go next? I see Trent. I see Nicole. I see Ezra. Do you want to go next, Trent? All right. Put you in the spotlight. How you doing?
You unmuted me? Okay.
Yep.
I'm doing okay. As far as book, I just listened to one called The World Undone, History of the Great War. And it was incredibly fascinating. I never heard kind of like a blow-by-blow what happened in the war, both sides, as, you know, one thing after another. And I always love history, so anyways, as far as a metaphor, I'm not sure if I can come up with anything. I'm just kind of putting one step and one foot in front of the other, and you know, things are happening at their own pace, and you know, I sit down with the computer, and sometimes I want to play a game, and sometimes I want to edit. So I'm just hoping that I get enough editing done to feel like I accomplished something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I have, but of course I could do more.
Yeah, we always could. Great. Well, thank you. That's great. All right. And Nicole, do you want to come on audio and share your check-in, your metaphor check-in, and also your favorite book or a book that you're enjoying currently or just finished? Or you could type it in the chat. Up to you. All right, let's see. Hey, Carol, can you track down the call-in number for Nicole and put it in the chat for her? That would be awesome. Thank you.
I can go.
All right, Ed, let me put you in the spotlight.
Oh.
There we go.
So metaphor.
Metaphor check-in.
I would say like a ball rolling down a curved ramp that it's kind of like a ski slope that goes up. So I feel like I'm going down there, getting momentum, and hopefully it'll give me enough momentum to keep going at the end of my spring break.
Excellent, excellent. And how about you, favorite book that currently reading, just finished?
Flash, we're starting reading aloud. It's a lot of fun because the protagonist is hilarious in the face of extreme danger. And right.
Yeah. And the writing is really good.
It starts off with him having the unfortunate of waking up with a dead body inside the trunk of a car.
And he's inside the trunk of a car.
He can't. And he lost 8 years or something. He thought it was 2001, but it's 2009. So.
Cool. Okay. Thank you. Great. It looks like Nicole is... So Nicole, Carol just posted phone numbers. There's a join by phone toll-free number. There's two options there. That should help you out. Thanks for posting that there. So as soon as you call in, we'll take your check-in.
What about yours?
What about my check-in? Let's see. I feel like, all that energy that you put into preparing a trip, you know, you prepare your itinerary and you pack your bags. And and there's like a lot of adrenaline with that, a lot of hurry. And then you finally like rush to get your train and you board your train and the train is leaving the station and you're like, I just started a new story, book four in my series. So that's how I feel with, I wasn't super frantic about all the prep, but there is this sense of urgency to get it done. And now that I am on the train of writing the book, it's slowly leaving the station and I'm slowly starting. So that is good. And then favorite book. Something I'm reading for pleasure is a book on deciphering lost languages. So like how has historians and decipherers deciphered these scripts that are very strange, like Linear B and Mayan, and I don't know why, but it's relaxing to read about this and how people deduced like what the hieroglyphs meant, the Egyptian hieroglyphics. That was something that it's feeding some part of my archaeology brain. So that's what I'm reading.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. Great. Nicole, let's see if you've figured out how to call in. Are you able to join us? Whenever you can is fine. We'll take your check-in.
I think we'll see her when she calls in, right?
Nicole, you already have the capacity to speak. You're unmuted, so you could try just speaking. That might work. If not, we'll take your check-in when you figure out the technology. Cool. And while she does that, now is the time of our call where we do open Q&A. I also want to invite you to do any kind of sharing, like a celebration. So I asked each person to bring a celebration, no matter how small, no matter how big. And if you're feeling like you need some extra witnessing, Witnessing is when you share something and don't get any feedback, but you just want to share it. And you can tell us if that's the case. You can like, this is what's up for me. I don't need feedback. I just want to share. Or you can ask a question, or you can celebrate, share something for celebration, and then say, hey, I'm celebrating, and then we can celebrate with you. So does anyone have any of those to bring to the group?
I do.
Ezra, what is it?
So I celebrate that I pretty much, I'll say I finished the rough draft of my Sherlock Holmes story.
Woo, hey. All right. Ezra. You did that today.
Yeah.
You did that today. Awesome. It's for how long?
I'll say it's going to be about 15,000 words. It's currently about maybe 14,000.
Mm-hmm. And you did that all this week, right?
Yeah.
He's on spring break, so he hasn't been teaching. So he's been taking himself to the diner and
writing
over 1,000 words a day. It's awesome. It's great. Super. Anybody else have any celebrations, any questions, or any requests for witnessing?
I think Carol.
Carol, do you have something?
I do. I just got the first book back in a game. Can you read it? Does it say Mind Games to you?
LDS Beta Readers, 27.
Yes, it's an anthology of which I am published.
Wow. So a celebration is in order for you as well. Certain type of campaign.
Nice.
All right. Woo! Oh my God! Is this the short story about the?
This is another short story about.
Sweet.
This is about the high-powered billionaire and the secretary-ish gal.
Yes,
not the one about the stars, the two stars. That's comes in the next anthology.
That's so great, Carol. Oh my God. That's awesome.
So now I have another book to put on my Amazon list.
That's so great. Oh, awesome. Exciting, exciting. Great. Oh, that's so wonderful. Virtual gold stars for the Wolfie.
Yeah.
Awesome. Super duper. And I see a number has called in. Is that you?
It's me.
COVID celebration. Great. So, Nicole, what is your check-in or celebration today?
Well, let's see. I finally submitted the blog tour post before the deadline.
Great.
And so that's done. And so now I'm trying to figure out what to read for May. And then I finished writing up the table of contents for the first season of my serial. I want to write the whole table of contents, and you know, of course, I would go back if I needed to change it later. But I want to have all the episodes, all lined up, so when I start writing, I don't have to figure out, okay, what's this episode called?
That's great. That's wonderful. And do you have a metaphor to express how you're feeling about how you're doing?
Not really. Can't think of anything.
No problem. And do you have a favorite book that you're reading right now?
Well, since I read I multi-read, so let's see. I don't know. I can't think of any like favorite ones that I'm reading. I guess because I just read so many different ones, you know, at the same time. I start them and then I check out the next one.
Fun. Well, if you think of one you want to share with us, because we're voracious readers, all of us writers, so you can pop it into the chat.
Okay.
Cool. And then now we're also taking questions or shares or, you know, celebrations of good news, or if you want extra witnessing, just to share what's going on without feedback. So this is open frame. That?
Okay. Well, I was wondering about, not that my book is out yet or anything, but about book promotions, as far as like, you know how they have those different services and, you know, you can get different like Twitter promotions. And I just was curious to know what your thoughts were as far as should I pay or should I just do, you know, promote it myself or how, but what?
Do the right thing.
That's right. which is?
Well, the first question.
50% chance of getting it.
Getting it right, yeah. Well, the first question I think to ask is, what is your budget, right? What can you afford? Because there's services at every level. You can get
really
cheap things, and you can get, of course, very expensive things. So it's really also a question of, what do you want to do yourself, and what do you want someone else to help you with?
Oh, okay.
Right. So.
Right.
It's a good idea to pick a direction, meaning say you want to, I know you're on Twitter a lot, so say you want to promote on Twitter. So it's always, you know, what can you do yourself? And by hiring other people, it means that they have access to communities and, you know, groups and followers that you don't have. So it's
right.
That's definitely beneficial. And you need to understand how their system works. Now, Twitter doesn't really do a lot for book sales, in my opinion, but it does a lot for connections, community, and awareness. And it use it strategically. So if you use Twitter to drive people to excerpts and giveaways and other things, promotions and Q&As and blog posts, like if you run a blog tour, then Twitter is great to send people to all those blog stops.
Right.
So it is good to hire someone if you can't do it yourself. I say, especially the first time out, hire someone if you know exactly what you want them to do. Don't just because they promise results, because I don't know. It's,
Well, like anything else, if, you know, the more you pay does not necessarily the more effective your results. You know, you do need to investigate and do your due diligence to see kind of the ROI, the return on investment, what their experience and background is.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to be specific. So when you are closer to promotions and you know exactly how you want to promote, and it makes more sense, then we can evaluate different vendors, different service
providers. Right.
For that.
Yeah.
But I've done both. I mean, I know how to do a lot of these things myself, but on occasion, and even coming up, starting next week, I've paid someone to, and I'm going to be part of her promotional campaign with the objective of building my list.
Right.
Giving away a review copy and building visibility. And that was like $35. To me, that's
$20. Right.
So things like that I do kind of ongoingly, and then I'm doing another promotion in May, also for my YA fantasy. Both of these are for YA fantasy because I'm building towards a big promotion. I'm hoping in the summer to really bring out my trilogy in a big way. So you have to be strategic and think about, well, why am I going to do the promotion, and how am I, is this money going to be worth it? And it's I'll pick very affordable campaigns that have the objective of building my list, because personally that's what I find the most important personally, but it's not like Ezra doesn't.
Yeah, that makes sense. I definitely would want to, like you say, look at my budget, because of course with me being on a fixed income and everything, you know, and I guess a lot of it, I can do myself because the Twitter I'm on, and now I'm, you know, getting my newsletter together, and I'll probably,
I would say, do as much as you can for free. And I know that you're focusing on newsletter, and this goes for everyone here, including Ezra and including me. One of the ways to build our newsletter is to ask other authors to mention us in their newsletter. So for example, I know, Nicole, you asked me to do a trade of some kind, and that totally makes sense. There's a few ways that and I had you write like a blurb, the call to action, and answer the question why. Why would another author want to say, hey guys, check out Melissa Green? And so I had basically like a value statement. Now that's interesting. And I could put that in my newsletter, or I could put that even in my author coaching newsletter, because you may find other cohorts out there who go, oh, this is cool what Melissa's doing. You know, advocate for the blind, writing about these topics. Cool. Yeah. So when you find other authors that you feel a connection with, you feel simpatico with, like it's values are similar or they match, then it feels good to say, hey guys, check out my friend's book. And
yeah, and I know a lot of authors do that, you know, that whose newsletters I'm subscribed to, they're always promoting somebody else's work. And then I signed up for newsletter swap, and it's pretty interesting. You know, that's what they do. You register putting your newsletter information, and you select the different categories, and you just swap and, you know, and promote different people who match your category and stuff.
That's really great. If you could post information on newsletter swap in the group, that would be great, because I think other authors would be interested in that. I haven't done that yet, but it makes sense if you wanted to say do a monthly newsletter, but you aren't publishing anything. You can say, hey, my cool friend over here has a new book, or they're having a 99-cent sale. I do that on Facebook. I will share other friends' promotions through my author Facebook page. So
because
eventually, you know, this is great. When you have a book out, then they will feel kindly towards you. It's not a for sure thing, but the people that are your friends and feeling friendly will say, be excited for you and want to share about your new release. So You're on the right track. That's really, really great.
Okay.
Good.
Sounds good.
Great question. Excellent. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
Other questions? Any more questions? We have time for a few more questions before I switch over to we're going to do the presentation on show versus tell, which will hopefully help us, inform us. And then we're going to dive into Trent's page and do, he's in the hot seat today, and we're going to do a deep dive into his first page from his book. So, great. Cool. Okay. Any other questions, you guys? Or shares or celebrations? Everyone's good? Okay. If you think of something, post it in the chat. Awesome. Great. So I will go ahead now and share my screen. We'll dive into our presentation. Thank you, Ezra, for that musical interlude. Wonderful. So last month we did a general kind of overview of what is show and what is tell. So if you want to have access to that, just go ahead and look into the group coaching section in the school, and you'll see that. I believe it was a month ago, and you'll see it marked show versus tell. So today we're going to get even more granular. We're going to dive deeper, and we're going to talk about into the scene level. And Ezra's going to provide us with some sound effects. Can you do that sound again?
Blah, 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 blah. Diving deeper.
Diving deeper. It's one of my favorite metaphors. I often talk about diving into my writing because that's what it feels like. So if everyone could just take a nice breath, we're going to start with a meditative moment. Noticing what you notice about where you are and how you feel. And we welcome in all the parts of you, including all the parts that are quiet, all the parts that are active, everything in between. We writers pull from the conscious, and we also pull from the unconscious. So we welcome all of that, and we pull from the mysterious and the divine, however you define that. So great. I'm excited to share with you all our thoughts, because Ezra helped me design this presentation, on showing versus telling at the scene level. And the big question I get from writers, and some of you asked me this as well, is how do we decide what to tell and what to show? Now remember why we're doing this. We are writing so that readers will have the experience of being immersed in our story. So they will have an emotional experience. So they'll be stimulated. So they will be transported and sometimes transformed and also learn things. So I was realizing that tell and show, they're just two ends of a spectrum. On the one end, and we have telling. It might be exposition, might be summarizing, might be description. And then way on the other end of the spectrum, we have our show. These are action words, direct thoughts, the senses, conveying the senses, conveying the feelings. And what I notice, especially in first drafts, and I do this too in my first drafts, I might have too much telling and not enough showing, or sometimes I'll be way over showing, like way too much detail. It kind of bogs things down and gets way like in the weeds, as some people like to say, or like super granular, like she put her hand to her lips, put in her cigarette, sucked on her cigarette, blew out the air, rolled her eyes, right? That you can go off that side. You can do too much show. And you can also have too much tell.
And for too much tell, it would be like there was a man who existed. Okay.
Okay. We have no details.
We don't need that.
Right. We don't need that. So these are tools in our toolkit, and there's no one right way. It's not show versus tell, like one is better than the other. They're not in a showdown, you know, fighting it out. They're really both tools that we use them both in our fiction. So I like this quote, and I like this little image. You know, our job is to create an experience for the reader of that I showed with a woman reading on the bench. And our goal is not to drown the reader in heavy-handed adjectives or heavy-handed anything, but rather to allow the reader to interpret significant details in the text. This is what distinguishes fiction from, say, writing a script for TV or film. We have to leave lots of room for interpretation, and we can, overwriting or showing too much won't leave room for interpretation, and telling too much won't allow them to have the immersive experience. So let's dive into showing you what we mean, and we'll cover how to decide what to use when.
Perfect.
Great. Ez, do you want to cover this?
Telling, so here are three ideas for when to tell instead of show. One situation is, say the reader has already experienced what the character has gone through. You know, they've seen how they've seen that the main character was eating burritos, and then, oh my gosh, he sees the walrus coming at him. And, oh no! So then later on, after surviving that, he goes to some other character. And instead of saying, well, I was eating my burrito and I was noticing the flavor, and then I noticed there was a walrus about to attack me. Instead of repeating all of that because you already went through it, you just have, without quotes, just say, I told him how I ate three burritos and was attacked by a walrus.
Right. So to reiterate, this recapping, another word for recapping is summarizing.
Yes.
Yeah. You see this often in fiction. And it's also helpful to the reader to remember, because maybe it was three scenes ago.
Right. And sometimes what I do is, if, say, we've seen the experience that the protagonist has gone through, and there are many different aspects of that mysterious aspect experience, then when he talks to the police, you can indicate what he reveals to the police and what he doesn't reveal. Like, so I let the policeman know how my house was broken into. I didn't tell them that I had brought a prostitute to the scene, you know. So you don't have to show all that. You can just kind of report it to the narrator, to the reader, and summarize it that way.
I like what you said too, reporting. So you're still in the point of view,
right,
of your character. You want to maintain the voice of the point of view character. Yeah, great.
Great. So that was one thing. Mm-hmm. The next situation is if there's a backstory. And so you can reveal the backstory of the individual, but there's no need to go into great detail. So for example, here's a scene where the woman is at her wedding and sees her ex arriving at the scene. And so she has now you don't know that this is her ex, but she says, terrific. Her husband for 3 years was now ready to ruin her wedding to her new husband. So, so there we get the information that she's had a husband that she was married to for 3 years. Yes.
Also, Ezra wrote this in what looks like to me direct inner thought, especially the word terrific, right? We get attitude with that. We get kind of sarcasm. And the way you phrased her husband for 3 years was now ready to ruin her wedding is like an assumption she might be having about this man. So you can use the tell technique to reveal backstory and maintain voice, maintain point of view voice.
Right. Yeah, and it's important that it's in short spurts. Otherwise, we'd have her husband for 3 years arrived. She remembered when they met, he had given her flowers and she liked it at the time. And then, you know, then they danced at a song. Stop.
We don't need that. That's too much.
And if that goes on for pages and pages, it's like, what about this wedding?
Right.
Get back to the story. So, okay. So the third situation, there may be uninteresting but necessary explanations. So imagine this. Imagine he finished making his sandwich in his kitchen. He put away the file in the file cabinet. Okay, well, now hold on a sec. First we were in his kitchen. Now we're in his office at work. How did he get there? So it's uninteresting to explain how he left the home and went to work, but we do need to know that he did that. So I drove for 50 minutes on the freeway to get to April's Diner. So that wasn't his workplace, but all right.
Maybe he works at a diner.
Maybe he works at a diner and files.
Files at the diner.
Files at the diner.
Oh, in the back.
Yes. So, what's nice also is it's just a quick sentence and that connects. That fills in that little gap of how he jumped from place to place.
And I think this is very, very useful in scenes to have a transition moment and that shows the travel and it's in one sentence. Mm-hmm. It helps the reader. Otherwise, the reader is noticing a gap and can get thrown out of the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And notice something else. So instead of he packed away his sandwich, he went out to his blue door car and he opened the door and he got into the car. He closed the door. He started the engine and he pulled out of the driveway. You know, all of that is just boring. Mm-hmm. So you're showing everything about that drive, but you don't need it.
You don't need it. And most of the time, the reason why you don't need it is it's just a little piece of, it's like glue. Now, I want to make a sidebar. Mm-hmm. There is an author we read that does the driving portions very, very well. And that's Michael Connelly for his Harry Bosch character, who is a detective in LA, and LA is like a person, an entity in his books.
Right.
So when he tells us that Harry Bosch is driving from one location to another, he names the freeway, and he often uses the drive time to work out the case. He's a detective. So you can use travel as part of working out the story, you know, working as part of the story, as part of moving the plot forward.
Right.
Or as a sequel, as a time to think about what just happened and to decide what to do next. So
yes.
These tell moments can have multiple functions.
Great. Now, suppose you don't want to tell. So in general, if you're not telling, you do want to show. show comes first, right? This actually dovetails with what Beth just said. If there is something that advances the plot or, just advances the plot. So that's a great time to show when the character is in the moment, show your scene, show the parts that are crucial to the scene and to the plot.
And we're going to go into greater detail in this. So think about what is necessary to move the story forward and what isn't necessary. So one of the tests I do when I'm editing, and I think you might do this too, is when I'm not sure whether or not something should be in there, like I need this description or I need some amount of telling, exposition or something else, then I take it out and I see if the scene works without it. And then if I notice something's missing, I put it back in.
Something else is, I'm reflecting on, there's this one time I had an aha moment, and that was when Michael Connelly's character picks up a Sunday paper to take a look at it. And instead of talking about how the paper felt in his hand and how the corner might have, the pages were thin or something, the only thing he said was how heavy it was. So that was like instead of overshowing, right? So instead of overshowing by listing as many adjectives as you can to describe the newspaper, he just found one that was perhaps the most noticeable of that moment. And he notices how heavy the Sunday paper is.
Yeah, that was it. That's great. Wonderful. So what is a scene? I realized I should define this, and so I grabbed a dictionary definition. A scene is a sequence of continuous action in a play, movie, opera, or book. So I always thought, when I was writing in the early days, that a scene was a sequence of continuous action in one place. But you can have your scene take place in multiple locations as long as it is a sequence of continuous actions. And this can help you decide what is the scene, where's the start, and where's the end of your scene.
Yeah.
So I want to now talk about the levels of show versus tell. And I got this from Kyler Ann Ford, who is in our group coaching program and posted this in our group. And I just thought this was so useful. She could not remember where it came from. So if anybody knows or has seen this before, let me know, because I'm always wanting to give attribution. So I can attribute it to her and she can attribute it to somebody else at some point. So now, level one, and I'm going to give examples in each one, but I'm going to summarize. Level one is pure summary. So that basically tell, summary, description, exposition. Level two is summary with a little bit of flourishes. Like Ezra was saying, you know, Michael Connelly picked up the newspaper, not Michael Connelly, Harry Bosch picked up the newspaper and noticed how heavy it was, right? Something, the way he just, so now we have a summary of his action and just a tiny piece. By flourishes, I think she means a detail that gives us, that brings us into the scene, into the feeling aspect of the scene. And then level three, showing a scene with an intermediate amount of detail. So this would include thoughts, feelings, senses, action.
Okay, I thought maybe that was level four.
Well, it looks like level four is a little bit more, showing with sensory details and internal monologue.
Yeah.
Which is, not every author is going to even show internal monologue.
Exactly.
And then level five is showing an extreme amount of detail, like she called it heartbeat by heartbeat. So I'm going to give examples, okay?
Great. I was just thinking of hard-boiled detectives, mm-hmm. how they'll stick to level three.
Right.
No internal monologue, just kind of see what happens, and that's it.
Right. I think we were reading, Ezra was reading out loud, Norman Chandler's Lady of the Lake, a very classic noir, and there is no internal thought.
Not Carol's detectives.
No, not Carol's detectives, but...
But she loves Lady of the Lake.
Yeah, so if you want to see what that's like, go check that out. Yeah. Great, so I'm going to give an example for each one of these, and actually it was Kyler who wrote these. Thank you, Kyler. So pure summary. She went to the bar to talk to her contact. It's very sparse.
Right.
Level two, summary and flourishes. She went into the pub across town where she hoped to find her contact, but she didn't expect a fight. So we're getting a little bit more nuance here. We're getting what she hoped. She's getting what she didn't expect. So I would qualify that as inner thought, but not direct inner thought. And then number three, when we're showing a scene with intermediate amount of detail, she walked into the pub, noting the crowd and the smell of beer. She searched for Jonathan, but didn't see him in the melee. Now we're getting a lot more details. We got smell in there. We got sight. You could even add, you know, of course, other of the five senses and beyond into this scene.
Yeah. And I'd say that would be the height of the detail of the Lady at the Lake situation. Gesundheit.
Level four, showing with sensory details and internal monologue. So this is her example. What am I doing here? She wanted to be home in bed with her cat, but here she was in 3-degree weather in a crowd of drunks and cigarette smoke. The bar was dim and Jimmy was working the taps, etc. So here, I feel like I'm inside a scene, right? We've got our inner thought, direct inner thought. What am I doing here? And her desire. She wanted to be in bed, but here she was. We got our 3-degree weather, crowd of drunks and cigarette smoke. Isn't that a wonderful, that's a wonderful description of the bar. And she knows this bar. Jimmy was working the taps, you know, so she knows who Jimmy is, and working the taps is an insider way of talking about bars. And so this, I'm right there. We're brought right into the scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then number 5, show with extreme amount of detail, heartbeat by heartbeat. So here's my example, and it's from my book, Henrietta and the Battle of the Horse Mesa, which is book 3 in my series. Ready? Frank said behind her. She spun, her sword poised. You're late. He crouched. You're in high spirits. He stepped into her, testing. She danced to one side. Leone finally let me out of training. Those robes, she shook her head. I think you look. She silenced him with a glare and step-fainted with her left foot and swung her sword from the right. He caught it in time and countered easily with a quick spin to the left and a slice toward her middle.
Great. I think that for moments like fighting or like extreme danger moments, it's so good to have level 5 presentations. And for a few reasons. One is there's probably going to be a lot of action, so you need to show moment by moment what all the action is. Also, the other thing that comes to mind is that this is a great way of having suspense. The longer it takes to get to the punchline, or the better.
That's great. Wonderful. So this is what Kyler said about what she notices when she's writing her stories. She said, for me, most stories will be a mix of level 2 for transitions and non-important moments, level 3 and 4 for a majority of scenes, with the detail increasing as the intensity increases. Less common is level 1 when you have to tell straight up and tell them something to get into more interesting moments. And level 5 at the most intense scenes when the character is in peril and every single little detail is included. Okay. So just exactly what Ezra said. So I want to know what for you, while you enjoy this little kitten staring off into the forest, what is your natural level? When you're writing your first drafts, what do you notice? Are you at level 1, all summary? Are you at level 2, summary and a little bit of detail? Or are you at level 3 where there's more detail and there's not necessarily internal monologue, but more sensory detail? And then level 4 is internal monologue, sensory detail, what I call the consciousness sandwich. And then level 5 where you're showing every little beat, really drawing something out. What do you notice in your first drafts? And what do you notice? Yeah, what's your natural tendency is really what I'm asking. So what do people say?
Trent points out that sex scenes are breath by breath.
Yeah, very right. When you want to slow down the action. I notice that when I'm writing, I do a lot of dialogue, movement through space, so kind of level 2, 3. And then every once in a while, I'll slow everything down. I'll get to about a level 4 and 5. I notice I tend to overshow. So I tend to write too much sometimes on the levels 4 and 5. And often in my editing process, I'm dialing back, I'm decreasing the intensity. What I showed with like a page, sometimes I'll cut down to a sentence. And then there's other things where I will get the feedback. I need to open it up. I need to go back up to like level 3 and 4. So what do you guys notice?
Trent says too much detail is my normal when I'm enjoying the story.
Okay.
Nicole points out you could do a combo method in one scene.
Absolutely. And that's what I would say. A combo could be levels 2 and 3. You know, once you start getting, I think, 3 and 4, you're really, let me go back to our summary of that. Levels 3 and 4 is where I think readers expect us to be. And then level 5 when we need to be. Pure summary definitely goes into those transitional moments where we want to tell readers, you know, have the character go from one place to another, have the character, like Ezra was saying, summarize what happened. or have that little moment of filling in summary of backstory. What about you, Ez? Where do you notice your first drafts are?
For my first drafts, I'd say are between level 3 and 4. Mm-hmm. But also my genres differ because right. my thrillers are pretty much level 3. And then, you know, you have your 1 and 2 for the telling instead of the showing. Those moments. But for my erotica level 4, I go there. And I notice that if I do more exercises on deep POV, that will improve my level 4 writing. Mm-hmm. And I have an exercise for that. There's just very briefly, if you try writing from the perspective of someone who has amnesia and is talking to a man and a woman, or is interacting with them. And so you find that if your protagonist is male, you can't really say he. And he doesn't know the names of the other characters too. And you can't say he because then you're not sure whether it's talking about himself or the man. So you have to go deep into it. So it's it's a lot of fun. It's really hard to do, but you'll find that you're saying things like, oh, just what I need, a nice bottle, thanks man. and he handed me another bottle, or no, he handed he stretched his hand out offering another bottle. Terrific. There are many uses for them, I'm sure. No, there are many uses for them. You really have to be careful because as soon as you say there are many uses, he was sure. You're like, oh well, which he is it? So it's deep, deep POV.
That's great. You'll have to write that exercise.
Yeah.
Great. So we need all of these levels. There's no, should here, and there's no expectation of what you should know by now. It's just noticing what do you write at and what does your story need. So one of the challenges I see is in your manuscripts, I've seen some of you guys' manuscripts, is you overshow. There's too much sensory detail, too much inner monologue, too much extreme detail. You're flooding the reader. The reader, remember, our job is to help the reader interpret the reality we want to convey. So always less is more. So there's no expectation that one should be at a certain level. You just are at the level you're at.
I like what Carol says.
Yeah.
It should be a combo pack.
It is a combo pack. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I found this image of stairs. To me, it's like walking the stairs up into a castle. So the further up the stairs, the higher the level. But you're still going to have observations of what's happening. Say you want to know what's happening inside the castle. You will have a little bits and pieces. I think of the closer we bring the character, the reader into the story, the higher the level we are. So that's a metaphor you might want to see if that's useful for you.
Great. Trent points out that it's the same in photography.
Oh, showing awesome. The minimum. Showing the minimum, right. Because we want to evoke.
Nicole asks, how do I show a nonverbal character? I'm not sure what that means.
Yeah, Carol. Nicole, this person can't speak, doesn't have language. Maybe you can clarify what you mean by nonverbal.
Because the protagonist can always observe the character and notice by the redness in their face and their scowl that they're angry, or they'll notice how they're fiddling with their hat, that they're nervous.
And a nonverbal character, if they don't have words or can't speak, can they feel? So can you describe what they're feeling from the inside? There's a great article on emotions that I shared in the group today or yesterday about different ways that you can convey emotion from within. It's from another writing teacher. It's a great summary.
I picked up a lot of it from Beth, like when she talks about the heaviness of her gut, that sort of thing, you know.
Right. You can talk about how your internal body feels, the organs and our breathing. These are all things that you have access to now through my Beyond the Five Senses class. So Nicole, if you want to dig into that, I can definitely point you in the right direction.
Is it from the point of view of the person who was raised in the dungeon, or is it the protagonist observing the person who's has no language?
That's a good question. Yeah. So who's telling the story, Nicole? Also, if he doesn't have language, does he have something else? Does he have is he more like an animal? He has just feelings and instincts. Does he have sounds? Can he make sounds that indicate certain things? So that's very interesting. How do you write about someone who doesn't have language? There are people who have been raised in the wild and people found them afterwards and tried to give them language with various degrees of success. So you might want to research that because there are real cases like this in the world.
So as POV is used sometimes. So I would probably just give him a different jargon, you know, like the man picked up the round thing and put it on his head, you know, for a hat. You know, if he
doesn't have the vocabulary for things.
Right.
But he might be able to. So this is a great question. I would recommend that you read like Helen Keller's biography or autobiography, right? She had a period in her life where she had no language, and other people like that, to understand what was their experience like, as you're trying to step inside the experience of someone who does not have language. Right. That's a great challenge. Wow.
Anything to convey a youthful experience. I mean, useful. I would imagine like shorter sentences, mm-hmm. you know,
very
hot.
Simple, right. The other thing is metaphor. I would really recommend that you find metaphors for the unconscious and what drives this person. And if he has a diary, then he probably has language of some kind.
Yeah, how can he write if he...
Yeah, how can he have a diary if he doesn't have language?
Research shows language is formed early and no real understanding beyond a certain age.
Yeah.
Oh, it's good. But he doesn't write the diary. So it's someone else's diary.
I also want to know, for you, how do you decide when to show and when to tell? Is to notice when you are very attached to your writing, but other people are bored by it. That's when you need to cut. Or when you reread your work, you're bored by it.
Yeah. It's good.
Great. Well, if you can put into the chat, what did you discover today? What are your ahas? And we're not done with our call. We're going to go into Trent's work. But from our presentation here, was there anything useful that you discovered? Any ahas, any light bulb moments? Anything that you can take away and implement into your work? Which leads me to my next question, which is, what is your next step? And I think I'm going to reframe that as, what is your next step based on what you learned here today? So if you want to share that in the chat. And in the meantime, Nicole is posting. Do you want to read that?
Oh, it's a blank audio diary.
So Carol says, I do like it that there are really levels of showing and telling. It's not something I thought could coexist. Yes. Yeah. Trent says, reminding me to change pace 1 through 5.
Nice.
Yes. Yeah. It's kind of like gears in a car, right? Sometimes you need to go slow. Sometimes you need to go mid-level. Sometimes you need to go fast, right? Anything for you, Ez? any ahas or discoveries or things you want to take into your work?
Yeah, I feel I need more practice with like number four. Mm-hmm. I feel comfortable. Maybe number five too, because I write those erotic scenes. Mm-hmm. So
cool. I think when you're writing first drafts, everyone, don't be hung up on this. Just notice what you comes naturally and go run with it. It's in the revision stages that it's important to make choices at which level you want to have the manuscript at. Great. Well, I'm going to dive into Trent's work in a sec. Great comments, you guys. Great questions. I'm just going to make sure I have Trent's thing here.
All
super
right.
Super duper. Great. Trent, are you ready? I'm going to dive into your thing. All right. Share screen. So.
What's up?
It's up. Great. This is the very beginning of your book, right, Trent? Is there anything you want to say about it before I read it?
Actually, no, because it is the beginning, and I'd like to see what everybody thinks.
Fabulous. Great. So I'll do what I've done in other editing situations. I'm going to read this. It's one page and 246 words, and then we'll go through it.
Great.
And Trent, you want just everyone's feedback. You don't have a specific thing that you want us to look at, right?
If somebody notices something that's good or bad.
So we want to say good things too. Wonderful. All right. I'll read this. Or do you want to read it? Ezra's got it.
All right.
Ezra's
I'll read
such
it.
A great reader of prose.
It's Grant. He's dead. Jeff's coffee had just halted 2 inches from his lips, where his hand had frozen as if striking an invisible barrier. The coffee dribbled down his arm as his head jerked up, and he exclaimed, "Ouch! Wait a second, Trish, what?" Quickly setting down the coffee, he started distractedly reaching for napkins. "I know, right?" It was chilly, but sunny, and the two old friends sat across from each other at one of the outside tables of their favorite coffee house. Jeff was soaking up spilled coffee and trying to gather his thoughts as Trish continued. "I don't know what to think. I have spent the whole morning since we got the news trying to figure out how the hell I feel." "Yes," said Jeff. "I imagine you might have a few conflicting emotions regarding something like that, all things considered." Then, with a mischievous smile, he added, "You didn't kill him, did you? Ha ha, very funny. So what's going on here, Trish? Are you just getting off on trying to shock me to death? Or are you going to tell me what happened? Seriously, it hasn't even been 2 weeks since you shocked the hell out of me with your last bombshell. What's come over you?" At that particular hair appointment, whose purpose had been more therapy than haircutting, Trish had revealed the most startling news: that she was carrying on an affair with her best friend's husband, Grant.
Great, thanks, Ez. That was a cold read. Ezra hadn't rehearsed. Great job. Excellent. So the first sentence. So now we'll start with some feedback for Grant, for Trent. I almost called you Grant. That's very funny. It's Grant. He's dead. So part of me wants to know who's talking.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I was thinking it was a kid, a policeman.
So even if you, gave us something like, Trish, gave us an action, what's called an action tag, Trish leaned in across, the cafe table. Because there's two things that readers want to know. They want to know who's talking, and they want to know where, and they also want to know why. But I think this whole announcement of Grant being dead, bless you, is actually a nice hook.
Yeah, it is.
It makes me want to go, what? Who?
Yeah, right.
And also, why should I care? I'm willing to read further.
So three lines on isn't good enough?
Not in my opinion. Because we don't know who's speaking. So, for example, Ezra had to make a guess.
Right.
He was doing the voice. He had no clues.
It's Gramps. He's dead. I don't know.
You don't know. We don't know until a little while later. So it's really better here. Let me take my suggestion here. We'll put it. So something like this.
And I like that suggestion. I think it works well.
Let's do this. I don't know why it's looking funny, but it's looking funny. All right. Trish leaned in across the table. And you could also add who the other person just leaned in across the table. Because we already have two names in this sentence, that's enough. If we added in a third name, we'd all be going, what? We'd be confused. So Jeff's coffee. Now, I kind of jolted a little bit with our had just halted. So it's way more useful if you give us the action in the moment. So
halted, right?
Yeah, but also we have a disembodied action. We have Jeff's coffee had just halted. Well, not his coffee, but his hand, him. He halted his coffee. So you might want to say, is this level
just of take out had just.
Right, right. So you say Jeff's coffee halted. But I want to say Jeff halted his coffee. That's what I would like.
Yep.
Okay. Is this level of editing okay for you, Trent?
Fine.
Okay. This is what one of my critique partners calls granular edits, because we're getting down really into the wordsmithing kind
of. I'm sorry, what edits?
Granular.
Yeah, like sugar.
Like grains. Like, can you touch granular edits? Jeff halted his coffee 2 inches from his lip, and then you don't have to say where his hand had frozen. You can just say his hand frozen. As if striking an invisible barrier. I really like that metaphor because it's so vivid to me. You guys like this? Just Jeff halted his coffee 2 inches from his lips, his hand frozen as if striking an invisible barrier. It's a really wonderful moment because it also conveys shock. And if anybody else has anything to chime in as we go through this sentence by sentence, you're totally welcome to.
Please do.
Please do. That's why we're doing this. And I love this. The coffee dribbled down his arm. Now, there's this construction of as. In real life, things do happen simultaneously, but in fiction, it's confusing. So you can write it. And because there's a lot going on, we can make short sentences, because short sentences help the action move along quicker. Coffee dribbled down his arm. Actually, again, not his head jerked up, but he jerked his head up. And I don't think you really need to say he jerked his head up, actually. We already have the sense of, there's another way to convey that something sudden. Because he's saying ouch, right? He's saying ouch because of his coffee.
Yeah, it could be ouch, and then he exclaimed, and then wait a second.
Yes, nice. I like that. Yeah, let's move some things around. Here, we'll cut this. And dialogue lines get their own, whatchamacallits, paragraphs. Thank you. He exclaimed. Great. Yeah, nice. And now we've got this kind of punchy feeling. Ouch, you know, wait a second, Trish, what? You only need one exclamation mark. And usually the order, oh no, you got the order right. I don't know. Wait a second, what? Okay. And then instead of quickly setting down the coffee, you can consolidate by saying something like, setting down the coffee with, now we can add a sound, with a clack. That kind of, when, instead of like, that already conveys kind of a loud, an urgency when we set something down and makes a loud sound. It is itself signaling urgency.
Yeah, that's a good way. And then Carol, can you come up with the verb that's an urgent setting down motion. So instead of setting down,
you can say he slapped the coffee cup down and it sloshed and got on his hand, but that would be up above and you don't want to take it down from there. So
just practically dropped it.
Thumping the coffee cup down, he reached for napkins. Because there is no start in fiction, there's only do.
Thumping down, slapping the coffee cup into the saucer. Yeah, we can take out with a clack. Scrat slap. And then he distract. What did you say? I want to take out started. He distractedly reached for napkins. We don't have, I think ELY words are okay sometimes. Distractedly is wonderful. But I like distractedly.
I didn't like it.
Okay.
I mean, just because.
I don't care for it.
I was kind of distracted by it.
How about some napkins?
Nice.
So if you notice what we're doing here, Trent, is we're taking away words and we're looking for more powerful words, more powerful verbs mostly. That's where I usually, when I focus on my editing, I really look for how do we really find the best verb, because verbs are the powerhouse of the English language.
And that's one way. And then another way, as Beth showed, is to have the sound, you know, with the clack.
Yeah.
So those are alternatives.
Actually, I think instead of slapping the coffee, you know, I do like better. And you could even do this. He clacked the coffee cup into the saucer, sloshing some of the hot liquid.
On the table?
Over the rim, onto his arm, onto the table. Right, we don't know.
Right.
Snatched some napkins. Oh, we're playing here. This is, to me, even this level of editing is still kind of first drafting. When I rewrite things, I don't know yet if they're successful until I reread them later.
No, and you're saying this here. Level of editing from yourself or from someone else editing?
Both. Well, if someone else were editing my work, I would have to input things that I think are appropriate and then reread it to see if I think it worked.
Right. I mean, because what I put here is granular edits by others are best when you feel you've completed your final draft. And the reason I say that is because if you have these granular edits and then you want to change the beginning, that so they won't be meeting, then you have all those granular edits that you're coming up. So that's why I think it's once you know the storyline and you have.
Well, I guess I would disagree with you, Ezra, because sometimes you think you know the story and you work really hard to polish the manuscript and then you end up cutting three chapters.
Well, no, I'm talking about something else, though.
Which happened to me repeatedly.
What's the word for a kind of edits when you change the storyline?
I'm not sure, but why don't we
All right.
Why don't we focus back on this and maybe we'll think. Sorry about that, Trent. Little editing conversation here. Okay, so this dialogue line. I know, right? I think this is a great place to give Trish again something. Like, Trish.
Right.
I don't know.
Can you ask where
responded.
They are?
Well, they're at a cafe. Trish Lee
Vanderbilt. I thought they were in a...
The whole next paragraph.
Yeah. Well, as you can see, Trent, people want to know exactly.
Right.
Yeah, if I don't know what the situation is, I don't know if they're standing. Are they sitting? Is he drinking coffee standing up? Is he at a bar? Is he in a coffee shop? Mm-hmm. I thought in the last sentence that he was in a hair salon.
Right.
Oh, yeah, me too. I thought they were in a hair salon.
So here you could put it in the very first sentence. Tristan, here's an example of tell. So we can take this part here. I'm going to move it up, and I don't know what's going on with my manuscript. Sorry, you guys.
Some weird stuff in there.
They sat across from each other at one of the outdoor tables at, now here, Trent, you change voice. You kind of go from internal Jeff's experience to external narrator. And I really want you to keep it, I'm voting for internal Jeff's experience. So instead of saying outside tables of their favorite coffee house, he would say the name of the place at one of the outside tables of, and what's the name of the cafe?
Granny's.
Outside tables.
Granny's.
At Granny's, like this. In town. So something like that. And the only way I know how to fix this weird visual formatting is if I closed it and opened it, but I don't want to do that right now. So something like this, Trish Linden across the cafe table. They sat across from each other at one of the, across from each other at one of the outside tables at Granny's, their favorite coffee house in town.
Very good.
Right? So now we know where they are, and we it's like this familiar place.
We don't know yet who's POV, right? Because there's no deep POV.
Not quite. Sentence. Not quite. But I think that's okay. Most readers are okay. They're totally willing to suspend disbelief.
Yeah.
Now, this thing about the weather, you can insert it right away, too. In the sunny but chilly, I don't know, what year? Is it like spring, summer, fall?
Well, you know what December is like around here. You never know.
December. There we go. So now we have this, that. So, we can cut that. So in the sunny but chilly December, Jeff halted his coffee, blah, blah, blah. So now we also know the setting of the season. And so back to this. I know, right? Now, instead of Trish said or Trish exclaimed, let's give Trish some attitude. Does she lean back and cross her arms? Does she giggle? Does she whisper? What is her action
here? She would actually be kind of worried.
Okay.
I think, she's not sure how she feels about it, so.
Great. So what's a physical action that Jeff could observe that shows her worry?
Well, whenever I have her upset, I have her rubbing her stomach.
Oh, nice.
Great. So you can even add a little more nuance, something like leaned back. Or maybe, so here's, I'm going to add something, if you don't mind, just for an example. So hunched over and rubbed her stomach. And you don't have to explain it to the reader. Just leave it like this. And the reader is going to draw some conclusion from that, right? So we're going to fill in the gaps. So here we start to get that it's in Jeff's point of view. This scene is from Jeff's point of view, right, Trent?
Well,
I get it from this, trying to gather his thoughts, because that's an internal experience.
Yeah, it was his, from the beginning, it was his experience.
Got it. So we can make this a little more direct. Let's see. Oops, no zeros in fiction. All right. Jeff no, soaked
maybe
up.
Maybe in your fiction.
In my fiction, Jeff soaked up the spilled coffee. Great. And I like this, trying to gather his thoughts. You know, we don't always know what to say, right? And then you don't have to say as is really, we don't need it. So Trish continued.
I probably do as too much.
Yeah, a lot of people do. And we don't need it because stories are already
saying. We all do.
I've been doing it lately.
Yeah. All right. I notice it.
It's like, what am I doing? Stop that.
Trish continued. and here, instead of Trish continued again, I want something more expressive. I want to add shrugged or...
Maybe she gazed out the window as if seeing something far off.
Well, they're outside.
They're an outdoor table.
So how about this? I don't know what to...
Maybe she gazed into traffic. Like
right. There you go. Good. Gazed at the passing cars. All right. Now can we get there on the street? And see, adding these action tags are a great way to reveal setting. And... emotion at the same time. I love them. So it's dual purpose.
You can make it a little surrealistic and have the cars be Lamborghinis. All of them.
Well, you can give us the sense of a small town also, if that, I don't know where this is set in front.
Imagine just one of a little tiny neighborhood of Oakland as a whole. You know, but a tiny neighborhood.
Tiny neighborhood. Yeah.
Very friendly neighborhood.
Great. So there wouldn't be that many cars. It could be Trish gazed at the few passing cars. And you could even say something to give us the time of day, like
it would be morning.
Morning. So commuters heading to work across the bay, right? So we've added a little time of day, we've added a little setting, and we get her looking away. When we look away, and we say, I don't know what to think, and we look away, it conveys something.
Reflection.
Yeah. We're reflecting. And then she says, I have spent the whole morning. Now, I just want to say a word about I have spent. That's usually we say I've spent. In modern language, we have a much more casual. She's like, I've spent the whole morning since we got the news trying to figure out how the hell I feel. And I love, there's a real personalization with the how the hell I feel. You know, you've given her a personality. I like that. Now, Jeff probably wouldn't say yes. Yes is like a filler word and something in editing we can often take those out. And, you know.
I had the impression of him hesitantly trying to support her and going, yeah, I imagine you would feel conflicting emotions.
Yeah.
So
I think you can cut it and we'll still get that that he's supporting her. Yeah.
Yeah.
If he's trying to come up with how to respond, then you can have a little tagline to fill in space, like, you know, Jeff sloshed his coffee a little more. If he needs a pause to come up with what to say to her, then you can have a tagline, and that will feel like a pause to the reader.
Right.
Finished cleaning up coffee or something.
Or you could even, because he was soaking up soap coffee already, so you could have him
throwing away the napkins.
Right, you know, Jeff tossed the
soap napkins.
Ezra's writing your story in the serialistic style. What do we say in English? Not bin, that's British, right? Garbage.
Trash.
Thank you.
Trash.
All right. Good.
Napkins.
The soaked napkins. Great. So, yeah, I love that. As that creates a natural pause. And then I imagine you might have a few conflicting emotions regarding something like that, all things considered. And we're like, ooh, what are all things considered? Ooh. So you piqued our interest, I think, with that statement. Then with a mischievous smile, he added, and you don't need then. Very infrequently do we need to use the word then. Because everything is then in fiction. Everything
right.
Is everything else. But I love this. From mischievous grin, you didn't kill him, did you? And I think this is hilarious. Right? We're all the way, right? We've got this interesting relationship being conveyed here. Ha ha, very funny. And in this, what is it that you're conveying? Is she worried here? What do you want to convey about Trish here?
Well, I mean, she's been cheating on her husband with this guy. Then he basically snubbed her, and she's glad to be rid of him, but she feels kind of guilty because she wished him dead just a couple days ago, and now he's dead.
Great.
I know someone like that.
Yeah. So here's an action you could give her. I know she rubs her tummy. You could also add in Trish chewed her lip. Something like this to convey worry. Because if we have them always doing the same thing over and over again, it gets repetitive. So it's good to have a few ways of conveying worry that you can use appropriately. Now we have these sentences, this dialogue here. So what's going on here, Trish? I would love another action tag by Jeff. He's her friend, right? And so I want, what does he do here?
He chews her lip as well. He helps her. Help you chew your lip. All right.
Oh my goodness. This is Ezra in full blown
sorry.
Surrealistic mode, I guess.
I would say Jeff admonished.
Well, no, I want to know what's
no tags.
Yeah, we don't really need Jeff said or any version of that, but we need like an action. Like, is he worried?
Oh.
Is he?
What action does he normally produce when he's nervous?
When he's nervous?
Yes.
But we don't know if he's nervous, Carol.
Is he nervous? So,
the question is, what is the emotion?
He's curious.
He's you know, he's her hairdresser and he's regularly plays the part of her therapist, you know, essentially psychotherapist. So he's giving her advice and he was worried about her.
Okay. And in this, I mean, he says, what's going on here? What's come over you?
Stroking chin.
Maybe. Oh yeah. Does he stroke? Is he neutral? Is he not neutral? They seem that he's generally pretty neutral, but these statements don't seem neutral. As he says, are you just getting off on trying to shock me?
He's a little camp.
Yeah, a little campy. Camp, is that what you mean? What does that mean exactly? I'm not sure.
He's a little gay.
Oh, well, yeah, how does this gay man feel?
What is he feeling here?
Maybe he can tisk. Oh, Jeff tisks. Are you trying to shock me? You know, how are you
judging her right now? Maybe he can rub his chin, right?
He's got a little goatee, so.
Oh, good. Rubbed his goatee. Very good.
That's good.
We get it. So now that to me conveys consideration, like thinking, wondering, curiosity. But his words convey a little teasing. Are you just getting off on trying to shock me to death, or are you going to tell me what happened? Now I would want her to respond. Because otherwise, it was too much of him talking. So, you know, can Trish glare at him? Right? She doesn't have to say anything. There's some in here to convey, like, I don't know, what would you think? How does she feel when
he's kind of... Well, this would be where I would put Trish chewed her lip, and I would do something different earlier.
Great. Okay, good. So what would you put earlier?
I don't know.
Okay, so we'll just do
that. I'll come up with something.
Stop on that. And then this action, it's called an action tag. So some kind of action to convey emotion, her emotion, or what you want.
Rubbed,
thank you.
Maybe that would be when she catches his eye.
Oh.
For the very funny comment.
Great. So Trish, so she's the actor here, so eyed him. She can do that, right? We give people the eye, right? Eyed him, glanced at him. I'm not sure, glanced at him. Because she was looking away. Now she's turned to him. This is also where you might want to be more emotional here, because you could add it something like glared at him, right?
I like glared.
Yeah, I like that.
Now we have a juxtaposition, right? Ha ha, very funny.
Yeah, that's...
It conveys a tone that we don't have to explain. That
I mean, another possibility is... Trish looked over her glasses at him, even though she didn't wear any.
Again, with the surrealistic edits. That's very good. Right, chewed her lip. And then we can have Jeff continue. Seriously, it hasn't even been... So seriously can have its own little sentence. Seriously, it hasn't even been 2 weeks since you shocked the hell out of me with your last bombshell. What's come over you? So is he kind of joking here? I mean, it's like, it's not as if he, I don't know what he's trying to convey here. There's a certain brother-sister kind of going on.
Very much so.
Yeah, okay, great.
I mean, that's very much the vibe I feel from them.
Okay, cool. And then now here's a tell, right? Here's a summary. At that particular hair appointment, whose purpose had been more therapy than haircutting, Trish had revealed the most startling news, that she was carrying on an affair with her best friend's husband, Grant.
Yeah.
So now are you going to go into the back? You're going to jump in time to then? Or in the present?
I forget. I mean, I know this is a much longer paragraph.
Right.
But the chapter goes on with her describing how he died.
Got it. Okay. So I kind of feel, without knowing what goes next, I'm okay with this moment. of summary, because now I'm like, what?
Yeah. Now, something to point out is that the reason Carol and I thought that this whole scene took place at a hair appointment was because it starts, you know, at that particular hair appointment as opposed to this one is how I thought in my head.
Yeah.
So if somehow it's rephrased. So at that time, it was a hair appointment and something to indicate that it was
right.
Mm-hmm. You could also put a time 3 weeks ago or so when the
it was 2 weeks ago. A hair appointment.
It was 2 weeks ago.
It was at her regular 2 week appointment that.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay.
I mean, you could move the hair appointment part back to where you shocked the hell out of them, and then.
Well, usually people don't say to each other.
Well, whatever.
Yeah, they both know.
I'm lost in them.
Yeah, in the weeds. We're in the weeds here. It was at, oh, I think I meant to say, at her regular two-week hair appointment, whose purpose had been. Now, here's where I want you to even add a little more of Jeff's voice, something like, whose purpose had been more therapy than haircutting, as per usual, like something that Jeff might say, as per usual, right? It's always more therapy probably than not. Trish had revealed the most startling news that she was carrying on an affair with a best friend's husband, Grant. You usually don't want to use exclamation marks except in dialogue. Let the reader feel the surprise in their own. Great.
Good. Well, thanks. I needed that.
Cool. Good.
The exclamation point in here.
Yeah.
And now I want to just explain about how, yes.
It's, well, let me just say that we're going to go a little over time tonight.
Okay.
So we can do our little wrap up. And I'm going to close this and get us back into the video. While you share that, is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's just the developmental edits need to come first before something like that. That's what I was talking about.
Great.
Because otherwise, if you decide later, you know what, let's have them jogging and talking together instead of at a cafe. Well, then all these granular edits are not going to help.
Except it always helps, right? It always helps you be a better writer.
Yeah.
It's okay. You can have a different opinion.
Right.
About this. Great. Well, thank you so much, Trent.
Thank you.
Today. It's so awesome. I want to invite all of you who haven't yet had a chance. We have two more hot seats for this month. One, so I'm going to transition now to telling you what's coming, and also to have you post in the chat next steps that you would like to announce to the group to be held accountable for. So go ahead and post that into the chat while I tell what's going on next. So what's going on next is
dun-ta-da.
We have our second group call of the month, which will be next Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific. And you're all welcome to come. It will be, again, show versus tell. We're going to go over the same topic, probably a little bit different. Someone else is invited to be in the hot seat. We can go over pros like we did with Trent today. We can go over marketing messages, promo plans, author bio, you know, anything within our author life, even story summaries, whatever is like a book blurb or brainstorm, anything you'd like. So raise your hand for that if you'd like that. The third group coaching call of the month will be 2 weeks from today, which will be, checking the calendar, will be April 20th, 5:30 p.m. Pacific. And then I have a new training that I'll be launching that you guys will have premium access to. I'm going to do an author branding statement training, a webinar, Wednesday, April 26th, 5:30 to 7:00. And then I have a new feature, which I thought I would launch at the end of April, but I'm probably going to launch the beginning of May. I'm going to start doing a once a month community call, which will be everybody, all the alumni, anyone who's taken a class from me, anyone who's done group coaching with me, and Ezra, and we'll be inviting them to a community call. And of course, you're all welcome to come to that. The time will be a little different. It will be, I'm going to do it the first Wednesday of the month at 12 noon to try and reach out to people at different time zones. And then in May 17th, Wednesday, we're going to do another paid training. Ezra's going to do how to write suspense in any genre. Yeah. So that is some of the things that are coming down the pike. Great. And then we have next steps posted here. Let's see. Nicole is going to work on her blog, newsletter and finish up her table of contents and start episode one. Yay. Episode 1. Awesome, Nicole. And Trent is going to re-edit his chapter one with all the info from today. Awesome.
Good.
Great. And next steps for you?
I will finish up the draft, because that was actually, you might say it's the second draft I'll be doing. Mm-hmm.
Great. And Carol, you want to share what your next steps are? Great. Editing. Ghostwriting for a friend starting tomorrow. That's awesome. How exciting. Good. And I'll be working on book 4. Writing. And super happy about that. And marketing. I'm shipping out 6 books tomorrow. Oh, yeah, I wanted to prep that tonight. I'm shipping out books tomorrow, hopefully, or next week for my reviewers around the world. Super exciting. Including this one woman in India who's given me really lovely 4 and 5 stars for books 1 and 2 and is eagerly waiting for book 3. I'm so excited to send my book 3 to her. Great. Well, thus endeth our group call. It's been so great to see everyone.
Yeah.
You're welcome to unmute yourself if you want to say good night. And we'll see you all soon. So I'll unmute you as well. So good night, everyone.
Good night.
Bye.